This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:08. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. First up, we're talking about how to improve safety in the workplace. This comes as the Prime Minister launched the Occupational Safety and Health Master Plan yesterday.
So the aim is to improve the level of safety and health at the workplace by reducing the rate of accidents, deaths and disease infection. All obviously key concerns in any workplace, but I think particularly in light of the pandemic as well as, I guess, this growing awareness of the workplace as a potential source of a lack of safety in some of these areas, essentially. So there are 7 key strategies, and they include things like strengthening self-regulation, encouraging education and research of occupational safety and health, ensuring better safety compliance, adopting the use of technology, and boosting the culture of OSH in the informal sector and future jobs, which I think is an interesting point because unless you are actively working in the space, I do think that for many of us, we sort of take it for granted that there are systems in place in our workplace that are going to keep us safe. And we don't necessarily always think about the part that we play in this, especially when we don't work in sectors where you face sort of life-threatening situations. And I'm thinking here of sectors like manufacturing or oil and gas, in which you're around heavy machinery. And therefore, this idea of safety is much more present than, say, in a radio station.
So I must say, I think that the pandemic and all of the SOPs required to be in a workplace because of that is only sort of the most obvious result of issues that we've been having for a while. These are systems, these are methodologies that need to be put into place. And unfortunately, we don't actually have the best of track records when it comes to that. If we just look at some numbers, right, we have 14.96 million employed workers in Malaysia. This includes non-Malaysians. And just in the last year alone, we've recorded 32,674 occupational accidents, 312 of those involved fatalities. So that works out to about a 2.09 occupational fatality per 100,000 workers. So all of which to say, I think this master plan comes absolutely at the right time, but also, as you said, Lynn, highlights the need to not just put down things because they're good to have, but actually work in a larger sense of implementing a culture of making sure that these things are placed as priorities.
I mean, I'm no expert, but to my mind, it would be twofold, right? On the one hand, you want to have systems in place that are going to be the most effective for you and your organization, right? You want to have a sort of a natural fit where you go in and things are just about as optimized as they can be, but you also want to create a culture in which people are aware of it. So it's not just that the systems work, but that people are also front of mind thinking about their own safety in the workplace. And I think it's those two things that I think we're lacking on both sides. And I'm thinking here, when it comes to the informal sector, of, for example, delivery riders. And I know they get a bad rep in this area, and I don't want to downplay the important role that they've played in getting us all through the pandemic, frankly, but the amount of riders that you will see going against traffic, beating traffic lights, just straight up riding in really dangerous ways in order to meet KPIs, for example, tells you something about how across the board, and when we look at different types of jobs, this issue of both the systems that are in place as well as the culture of safety, both of those are issues.
Because what is workplace for, let's say, delivery riders, right? How do you even define that? Who oversees those things? These are all important questions that I think we've only just begun to address. We are talking about workplace safety, and this is coming on the wake of the Occupational Safety and Health Master Plan that the Prime Minister launched yesterday. We will be very shortly speaking to safety practitioner Dr. Krishna Bala, but we'd like to hear from you. Is your workplace safe? What do you think could be improved? You can call 7733 2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beyond frivolous matters, BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:13. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about workplace safety. The Prime Minister launched a workplace safety master plan yesterday. And so we thought we'd get into what that might entail, what the factors we should be looking at are. Do let us know. Is your workplace safe? What do you think could be improved? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now joined by Dr. Krishna Bala, who is a safety practitioner. He's also the author of the book, My Life in Safety, that was just published by Gurat Budaya. And in that book, he reflects on his journey in the field of safety, as well as his takeaways from that. Krishna, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Could you get us started by telling us how safety became your lifelong passion?
Yeah, I stumbled into safety. I took to it like duck to water. You know, I found that I could add value. And if you add to the fact that, you know, whatever I was doing could actually, you know, prevent injuries or save lives, I think that was a kind of a positively reinforcing spiral, as it were. I had very meaty frontline operational roles. I was an offshore installation manager and a plant superintendent, meaning that on a daily basis, I was dealing with safety versus the production tension, right? So I had to manage that all the time. My educational background helped. And I think also a personal trait was that I had this innate ability to understand systems and to be able to maybe tweak it to deliver, right? I was also fortunate that in my career to that point, I was involved in many performance improvement projects. I had an opportunity to work with many brilliant consultants. And I think some of that rubbed off me. And so all of that sort of came together when I went to that safety tile and enabled me to do what I do. So looking back, you know, in my old age, I guess I can be philosophical. Life prepared me for it. Yeah, that's kind of how it led me to safety and the passion I have for it.
So in your book, you actually brought up a number of significant experiences which shaped you in your profession. As you mentioned, right, like you got your beginnings in large companies, really, and working in industries where safety is of the utmost concern. I mean, for us here in radio, it's not so much a daily consideration, but for you, you know, in spaces like oil and gas, it would have been very important. Could you share some of these stories?
Okay. A couple of things that I mentioned in my book, right? One of them was about this reciprocating compressor saga. It was in a time when, sort of in the early 90s, a time when the high oil price. And these compressors were giving us problems. So I think the first thing that came to mind was that it was an operator error, something the operators were doing that was not helping us. But the failures continued, and investigation ultimately showed that it was a design issue. Yeah, so we had to get the research boards in, we went to the manufacturer. For me, the bottom line here is that it seems that in this instance and many others succeeding, that the front line, the guy in the front, the final act always gets the blame, which in effect is, for me, not true. It's the system, right? So as another example, you know, we had these unfortunate 737 MAX crashes in Indonesia and then in Ethiopia as well. Lost 300 over lives. The first response from Boeing was that it was pilot error, right? So the common thread there is it's the lorry driver, it's the operator, you know, it's the pilot, it's the person, you know, sort of at the sharp end, as it were, of the activity. And for me, you know, coming from my perspective, there are things in the background that actually are causing it. So in the event of the 737 disasters, it was a software glitch that the pilots knew nothing about. They were not even trained on what that software was going to be doing, as an example, right? So that's one. Another one is very personal. This one is about about leadership. And it goes back to the time when I was a rookie OIM. I have to set the scene a bit. In an offshore complex, if you have to evacuate, you have to use the lifeboats. Now, if you cannot go to a lifeboat, you have to use life rafts. these life rafts are dotted all around the complex. And they are like in big cylinders that you throw overboard. And once they hit the water, they inflate. Okay. The day in question, I was told by somebody I respected that these canisters, as it were, big canisters, had their shipping straps still on. So I called my production supervisor and I said, okay, can you please, you know, go cut those straps? So on my first walk around in the morning, I saw the straps were still there. I didn't do anything. In the afternoon, in my second walkabout, I saw the straps still there. And I did something very rash. You know, I called for scissors and I cut the straps myself, you know, and I took a piece of that strap and I strode down to the control room to confront my production supervisor and say, why didn't you cut it? Because this is a safety piece of kit that, you know, we wanted to make sure was in a condition that it could be used. And he said, excuse me, so sorry, but actually when I talked to the manufacturer and they said they were not shipping straps, they were supposed to be there in the first place. So it was an extremely, I would say, embarrassing moment. And what I did was I called everybody to come to the control room. And I, in front of everyone, all of the personnel on board, I apologized to my production supervisor. And I said things like, you know, I should seek to understand before I act, not jump to conclusions. And that's how I would want my boss to treat me if something like that was to happen, right? So, but that was not the end of the story. Fast forward, you know, 10 years down the road, I was in the States at that time. I had a reason to call back the home office for some HR reason. And lo and behold, the guy on the other side of the line was one of the operators who worked for me. So I said, hey, this is Krishna here. And he said, Krishna, which Krishna? So I said, Krishna, la, you're OIM. La. So he said, oh, Krishna, oh, I remember. You are the guy who cut the strap. You are the guy who cut the strap. So for me, you know, that's a lesson for life, right? I mean, it's about listening. It's about trying to put yourself in the other person's position. I think that's something that, you know, leaders need to inculcate. You know, those are some of the things that for me were defining in, you know, my career in safety, right?
So in your book, you advocate for a model called the flow, and that incorporates data, analysis of trends, and also finally a strategic application. Why is this sort of systematic data-centered approach important? Do organizations have such a method in ensuring safety?
Yeah, that's a big question, though. So the flow, as it were, has two big parts. So it's about the data, what the system is telling you, and then what do you do about the data, about the actions that the data is telling you that you should take. So for me, the fundamental is the data, right? You need to be able to interrogate your system so that you get the information you want to be able to make changes and to improve it. So COVID-19 is a great example, right? When it first came out, you know, I think the early signs were that the people who were most vulnerable were the elderly folks, right? So data says, go work with your senior citizens, okay? So that's easy part. I think the not so easy part is to making it happen, right? So there was a lot of backroom work. Malaysia has done wonderfully, actually, let me add. A lot of backroom work to make sure that, you know, the people required to actually give those injections were taken out from their day job, I presume. You know, the centers had to be put in place. You had to procure the vaccines. You had to make sure that you had a system whereby you do the appointments. You had a system whereby you document the data, so on and so forth. So what I'm trying to say is that implementation is not easy. If it's well thought through, it will work seamlessly. That in most part happened as far as our COVID vaccination program is concerned. Now, if you ask me to go back to, okay, where our organizations are, in my humble opinion, I think they have the data, right? But I think where we fall down a bit is in the implementation. Yeah. So it's easy to say, get the data, but it's one thing to have the first up information, but it's more difficult to actually get down to, okay, why is that happening? So for example, in Malaysia, we have many fatalities for people falling from height. Okay, right. So you got to control, like, you know, you have a harness and so on and so forth. But the question then becomes is, why are we still having these incidents? So, and I think that's where our organizations need to have something more systematic to be able to get to the end in mind, right? I.e., whether it be in safety. And actually, what I propose does not only apply to safety. I think it applies to any improvement project that an organization wants to get to. So it's about getting out of the paper into the execution, using the data in a manner that, you know, is useful.
But I think the other part of it, of course, is that it all then gets, when you talk about implementation, to people. And yeah. You also talk a lot about psychological and behavioral aspects when it comes to applying safety methods, safety systems. Could you share a bit of that with us?
Yeah. You know, we are a very complex element, people, right? I mean, we are complex specimens. And can I just take a moment to talk about systems? I mean, what I mean by systems in the context that I work in is that there are three big components that need to come together. There's the people, you and me, the plant, the machines, and then, you know, the process, right? All of this needs to work together so that we can actually deliver to the objective of the system. So airline travel is an example. You need good pilots, you need, you know, really good aeroplanes with much redundancies, you need air traffic control in the process. They all need to work together so that we can go to A to B safely, right? If something breaks down in that link, you know, lives are at stake. So coming back to your question, the key is the person, the people, right? What we'd like to do is to get people to behave in a consistent manner, and we don't. So let me give a really practical example. Is how do you get people to follow the speed limit? One way to do it is to make sure that we have copper at every corner or a camera at every corner to catch the people who are speeding. Okay. Studies have shown that it is not the quantum of the fine, but the probability of getting caught that modifies behavior. So if you're going to get caught every time you speed, you're not going to speed. So one of the I think great examples to just look across the causeway in terms of how things are done there. And they use a lot of behavior modification techniques. So what I'm trying to say is that you need to think about in implementation, you need to think about behavioral science. You need to think about how the individual is going to react. It's about understanding how to get your positioning right. And then you also have a bit of stick. You have to make sure that, you know, you have systems in place that make sure people comply. So it's a very complex and complicated. I'm an interested amateur, but it is absolutely critical that this important cog is taken into account when you're planning interventions.
From your observations, what are some key aspects that are often missing in how Malaysian organizations approach safety?
Yeah, I have to be careful here. I think I cannot broad brush. Yeah, I mean, there are some excellent organizations that manage safety excellently. But I think the big picture fact is that in Malaysia, one worker dies every day in our workplace. That is unacceptable. And then if you add to the fact that 16 people a day die in our roads, you know, it's a telling statistic. Yeah. So to kind of get to the question, I think I mentioned it before. We are very good at producing paper. We're very good at saying, okay, putting pretty pictures, having a plan, having a strategy. But what's missing is the execution. So I live in a concrete jungle where there are many condominiums being constructed. Okay, so to give you an example of artifacts that are not executed. So when you kind of look from the outside, you see all the safety slogans, safety first, whatever, no harm to people, all the signs about, you know, you should wear a hard hat and so on and so forth. But you just have to look up and see the violations that are taking place. So that is the disconnect, right? And therein lies that gap. Right. And that is, for me, the challenge for the leaders of high-risk industries out there that this disconnect need to be closed. And if there's only one tool that, if I can say the listeners can take away, is what I call the leadership site visit. The leader needs to go to site to have a look at what's going on in his organization. He needs to kick the tires. And if he does that, the message goes that, you know, he means what he says and things will get better, I would say, better implemented.
And in closing, Krishna, I mean, as somebody who's been working in this for so long, what are your hopes as a safety expert moving forward?
I think in a philosophical terms, zero is possible. Yeah. People tend to think that, it's only a way of life that, you know, somebody gets injured, somebody gets killed, whatever. It is not the case. Zero is possible. We have many, many examples of where that is. And the other thing that I can maybe tell the Mr. Leader who is listening on his way to work or way home is that if you get safety right, in all probability, your business will be right too. Yeah, there are many examples worldwide, even in Malaysia, around how those two go hand in hand. Yeah, so it's my hope that we get to zero.
Krishna, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
That was Dr. Krishna Bala, safety practitioner and author of My Life in Safety. That book is available at Garabudaya. And we've been talking about safety in the workplace. So we'd like to hear from you. Is your workplace safe? What do you think could be improved? Send your thoughts our way. And we'll revisit this and we'll look at them after this. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.